of your Wednesday edition of Justice and Drew is underway. 651-989-5855 is the phone number. Use the hashtag TCNT on Twitter.
Yesterday, Trump declared U.S. leaving horrible Iran nuclear accord. And joining us on the phone, a member of President Donald Trump's campaign advisory board. Very pleased to welcome Steve Rogers. Good morning, sir. Thank you so much for taking time out this morning and joining the show. We appreciate it.
Well, good morning. It's a pleasure to be with you.
You know, I don't know about this whole deal. I mean, former President Obama said, you know, called yesterday, the decision was misguided and a serious mistake. I say that with much sarcasm and snark there, Stephen Rogers.
Well, think about this one. Since the late 70s, right, when our hostages were held at the U.S. Embassy in Iran, all the way to the present day, Iran has continued to sponsor terrorism worldwide. They've continued to harass free nations. They've continued to break their word. And here we have President Obama and others condemning President Trump for doing exactly what he promised. He was going to make America first. He was going to keep the national security interests of the United States first. And he sent a very clear message to Iran, and by the way, to other hostile nations around the world, that this president means business.
Yeah, it really is stunning to see the lack of conversation in the less than 24 hours since Trump made this announcement about Iran and their sponsorism of terrorism. I mean, you go back to January of 2016, and John Kerry said himself that a bunch of the funds from the deal probably landed in the hands of the radical Revolutionary Guard in Iran. I mean, they knew they were state sponsors of terrorism, and yet the media just doesn't even want to bother mentioning that at all in the wake of Trump's decision yesterday.
Well, how about this one, which is very troubling to me? I served 25 years in the Navy, worked for U.S. Naval Intelligence. My son is a Marine. He fought in Iraq. And when I think about what Iran has done to shed the blood of American men and women in the Mideast at war, Iran is responsible for the IEDs that blew up Marines and soldiers and sailors. And yet we have the Democrat Party, we have John Kerry running around, former President Obama running around saying, well, you know, they'll keep their word. We need to stay in this deal. They have never kept their word. And in addition to that, the Israeli Prime Minister came up with pretty damning evidence the past few days that Iran is not keeping its word and they have other designs. And in particular, which I think is very troubling, let's face it, they would love, meaning the Iranians would love, to launch some sort of an attack on Israel, and that has to be stopped, and our President Donald Trump is stopping it.
Can you break down just quickly what the deal, you know, kind of the cover, if you will, for lack of a better word, what the cover that the deal was giving Iran, because they were still developing and continued to develop their program. Can you break that down a bit of what the deal was giving them? That and specifically what also Benjamin Netanyahu pointed out, last week?
Well, look, Iran, like other countries of their like, they know that they had the power to prevent the IKEA from coming in and looking at and inspecting their facilities. They also know that no way on earth would anyone have the ability to check on them. Look, there was, in this deal, they had up to 24 days notice that the inspectors were coming, which would give them time to clean up their act, if you will. So the deal was bad from the beginning, as the president said. They have continued to build and build and build. And let's face it, do you want to trust the Iranians? I mean, this is what Kerry and Obama and others are saying. Let's trust them before we trust President Trump. Are you kidding me? So now they have a problem. The Iranian government has a real problem because, look, Obama gave them millions, maybe $1 billion. You remember the famous airport cash trade-off? Remember
yep.
that one?
Yep.
They got a lot of money. That money was supposed to go to help their people. Instead, it went towards building nuclear weapons. And so the deal was always one-sided, never good for the United States. And the Israeli prime minister, I'll tell you what, they've got a pretty efficient intelligence network. That information clearly showed that deal was never accepted by the Iranians. They were doing what they wanted to do, and they knew how to do it.
So where does it go from here? Do you think that, you know, us withdrawing from the deal is going to put pressure on the Iranian government? The Iranian government has been under a great deal of pressure from its own citizenry to sort of change its ways. I mean, there is a strong reform movement in Iran. Do you think that the pressure will be put on them to be better actors, or are they so insulated from their own citizenry that they will just sort of they will go even more vociferously down the path toward nukes that they already have?
Well, the art of the deal, remember that President Trump's decision on this was brilliant, because there's going to be pressure on two fronts. You're absolutely right. There's going to be a lot of pressures on the Iranian government by the people who live there, but more so, there's now going to be pressure on our allies to make a new deal, a better deal. Look, the president is smart. He has positioned this in such a way that our allies, who some of them are whining, but they'll come around to make sure that there's going to be a brand new deal that's going to benefit the United States in particular. So, look, the Iranian government's going to have to make a critical decision. Either they're going to have to get with it, or they may find a problem where the people are going to rise up and do some regime change there, as well as our allies. They're going to have to realize that they got to get with it, too, because there's a new sheriff in town. And the president, this president, Donald Trump, is leading from the front, unlike the other president, President Obama, who's never led.
Talking with Stephen Rogers, again, a member of the President Trump's campaign advisory board. Does this impact, because there was some news yesterday, shortly after the president made his announcement, talking about the potential for this impacting the talks that are going on with North Korea. Does it, in your opinion, have any impact on that, or are these two separate issues and one is not directly impacting the other?
Well, if there's any impact, it'll be to our favor. The North Korean dictator realizes once again that this is a president who means what he says. And I've said it all along. Look, remember the Syrian missile attack? 101 missiles going into Syria a couple weeks ago. Boy, was that a clear message to North Korea. You don't fool around with this president. So if there's going to be any impact, it'll be positive in the sense that the North Korean dictator realizes that he's dealing with a president that really means what he says. And so I see at the end of the road, the North Korean dictator is probably scratching his head saying, look, this guy, meaning President Trump, means what he says, so we're going to have to toe the line here and do what's right.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can look at the track record so far with Trump. I mean, he makes these moves, and everybody sort of gets the vapors and starts fanning themselves and going, oh my gosh, what does this mean? He's doing things very differently, but so far it has yielded pretty positive results. So I would say, you know, for the critics out there and for people that are concerned about this decision out there, just, you know, hang tight. See how this plays out, because there's a lot of vested interests around the globe that want to have, you know, want to see this deal revived in some form. So it's entirely possible, as you mentioned, the art of the deal, that we come out of this on the other end with much more favorable conditions for the United States and much more stringent requirements on the regime in Iran.
Because of President Trump, America is back, and I'll tell you what, you'll never see us turn back. This president has put us on a road to where we should have been many, many years ago, the leader of the free world. We have it in President Trump, and it's going to stay.
Steve Rogers, thank you so much for taking some time out this morning and talking with us. We greatly appreciate it, and hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thank you.
Take care.
Getting into some of the details of what took place yesterday, Trump did say the 2015 agreement was a horrible one-sided deal, should have never been made in the first place. He added the United States will be instituting the highest level of economic sanction. So the decision means that the Iranian government, and this is out of the Associated Press, must now decide whether to follow the U.S. and withdraw or try to salvage what's left of the deal. The Iranian president, Rahsan Rouhani, said he was sending his foreign minister to the countries remaining in the accord, but warned that there was only a short time to negotiate with them, and his country could soon start enriching uranium more than before. I don't know if you saw the news earlier this morning, but they had a big brouhaha meeting in Iran, and a bunch of the elected officials, they were shouting, death to America, and
they like to do that.
They burned an American flag.
Yeah, they like to do that, too.
Yeah, this is very, they kind of take the idea of like British Parliament, like up to a different level.
You know, I'm watching all the coverage yesterday. I'm watching all the reaction, the commentary online and on social media, and everybody's, you know, flipping out and freaking out and saying this is a, you know, brings us closer to the brink of nuclear war. And I just can't help but be reminded of not that long ago when they were all saying the same thing about North Korea.
Right. Right.
Oh, here we go. And you had news stories about, okay, you know, if nuclear war breaks out with North Korea, here's where their missiles could land. Here's how far they could reach if you're in these areas, you know, and everybody now is like, well, that's clearly not going to happen. So I have a hard time taking seriously, you know, the dire doomsday predictions of Trump pulling out of this deal.
Yeah. You look at some of the, some of the tangible things that are happening here, right? Or some of the things that are happening with this. So they're going to reimpose sanctions. Those include precious metals, banknotes, shipping, the automotive sector, petroleum, according to the guidance from the Treasury Department. Listening to a lot of the commentary yesterday, in terms of oil prices, it probably isn't going to have that big of an effect on us here in the U.S. because we're not getting a majority of our oil by any stretch. I mean, Iran is way, way down on the list for us here in America. They talked about there's some deals with Boeing and Iran that could be affected by this, but overall we shouldn't feel the sort of the financial aspect of this.
I said earlier, there's going to be a long grace period, you know, in effect to make sure that businesses have time to get into compliance with whatever the new standards look like.
Yeah, analysts told CNBC the impact of reimposed sanctions might not have the same impact it once did. Countries may limit their oil purchases from Iran out of respect to the U.S., but there are other countries that might refuse to do so. Iran's crude output has risen to about 800,000 barrels per day since January, making it the sixth largest oil-producing country in the world, according to Fox Business. Most of its oil is reportedly purchased by Asia. And again, the bigger takeaway, and we keep talking about it, is he backed out of the deal, but this could be to what you were saying earlier. This could also be a means to get a better deal in place. And that's something that even Benjamin Netanyahu wanted to see. The Israeli prime minister praised Trump for his decision, said, "I said it from the start. It either has to be fully fixed or fully nixed." Netanyahu said before Trump's announcement, "If you do nothing to this deal, if you keep it as it is, you will end up with Iran and a nuclear arsenal in a very short time." They hadn't stopped their program.
Right.
They were still, they just had a nice curtain that they can go hide behind, and they looked good on the world stage. But the reality is, as Steve Rogers pointed out, man, these are bad actors and state sponsors of terrorism. They didn't suddenly change just because former President Barack Obama handed them a crate full of cash. Yuck. And made him sign this deal.
Can we get a refund?
Is that, yeah, right?
Can we get that back?
is that
maybe prorated a little bit?
Is that possible?
Can we get that back? Because not only have they continued to further their nuclear program, they've done it with our money.
Yeah.
Like, we funded it. We gave them money, lots of it, to go build more weapons. Brilliant.
The White House will now take greater action to combat Iran's ballistic missile program, which is left virtually untouched by the original agreement. Iran can never have an ICBM, cease developing any nuclear-capable missiles, and stop proliferating ballistic missiles to others, according to White House officials. It must also cease its support for terrorists, extremists, regional proxies such as Hezbollah, Hamas, Taliban, and Al-Qaeda, the White House said, noting that Iran must also end its publicly declared quest to destroy Israel. At the end of the day, and we're going to get to this this Cohen-linked firm received big payments from the Russian oligarch here in just a moment, because it plays in that dropped yesterday in the wake of this, specifically because of this particular deal. There is an opportunity here, and again, you kind of do best case scenario. At the end of Trump's administration, you could end up with not only a better situation with North Korea than we could have ever have imagined. But we also could walk away at the end of this whole thing with a renegotiated deal with Iran that actually did what we were told the original Obama deal was supposed to do. Right. Best case scenario.
Right. No, that is the best case scenario. And it's not out of the realm. It's not that ridiculous or unforeseeable a scenario, because it's not just Trump. You've got a lot of European allies that have a very strong interest in seeing some kind of deal come together. And if they're all going to come together and say, all right, President Trump, under what terms will you agree to a new Iran deal? You know, Trump has given the United States a ton of leverage with this move.
Jim Acosta, CNN, tweeted this yesterday. I think he meant it as a negative. He tweeted this. Obama policies dumped by Trump.
Yeah.
Iran deal,
uh-huh.
Paris climate agreement,
uh-huh.
Trans-Pacific trade deal,
uh-huh.
DACA, Obamacare individual mandate.
Yes!
Yeah, that's amazing.
Making America.
Yes!
That's right. Hashtag landslide.
I know. I'm sure he meant that as a negative, but you know, hundreds of thousands of people saw that and were like, that's awesome.
That's really cool.
That's why we voted for him.
That's amazing.
That's why his supporters showed up.
Coming up. More Americans, it's out of CBS News, now say the Russia investigation is politically motivated. And you wonder why.
Wait.
Suddenly.
What?
Yeah. You wonder why we all know the word oligarch now.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Welcome back to your Wednesday edition of Justice and Drew. I'm in the middle of preventing full-out fisticuffs between producer Sam and oligarch John.
My fists are tiny, but they are mighty.
You just made a threat. If I grabbed one thing from her studio, which was a neon Sharpie.
A neon yellow Sharpie, which is like, why? Just make a
because
highlight.
I used it to highlight stuff, right? But then she explained to me that if I were ever to go and take the black Sharpie in her studio,
that would be the death
would,
of you.
She would fight me.
Yes.
You'd be to unleash her fists of fury upon your head.
I don't know if people are aware, but I often look for every opportunity possible to get into a fight with Sam. That's one of my favorite things in the world.
He actively seeks it out.
We will get into coming up just after the bottom of the hour, and we encourage anybody who's involved in this has a take, if you were there, to give us a call. The story we're currently looking at is out of Fox 9. Edina parents question the role of politics and education following school board controversy. We will try to give you the short version and dive into it just after the bottom of the hour. But, man, you want to talk about a never-ending parade of stupid.
Oh, my goodness.
It really is unbelievable.
Yeah.
The real short version, and we'll give you more of it, is that there was a 10th grade teacher in the Edina school had put up essentially like a blog post talking about how we need to end racism and racial equality in schools and all the different ways that we need to go about in trying to achieve this level in high school. And one particular board member in a private message board on Facebook expressed concern, rightfully so, about what was posted in public in this 10th grade teacher's blog post. And there was a school board meeting that was called to find out what to do with the school board member that had the audacity.
The audacity.
To go and point out concern over a public blog post of a teacher.
How dare you?
Huh! Thou shalt not question the social justice warrior teacher. Talking about whiteness a lot.
There is no room for dissent. There is no room for questions when you're dealing with these social justice advocates.
Oh.
That's it. I mean, just asking a question is enough to get you completely outcast.
Wait until you hear just some of the points from this blog post from this 10th grade teacher who clearly, in my professional opinion, is off their rocker. Holy cow. All right, that's all coming up. First off, though, out of CBS News, a year into the special counsel investigation into Russian involvement in the 2016 elections, a slight majority of Americans think the investigation is politically motivated. 53% say so.
Yeah.
While 44% think the investigation is justified.
Yeah, that's a pretty, I mean, those numbers aren't that far off.
That's slight.
That's about as close to a 50-50 split as you're going to get, you know, when you factor in margin of error and things like that. But still, the majority do believe that this is politically motivated. It's obvious to some of us that it's politically motivated, that it's been politically motivated from the get-go, that the only reason that you even have this investigation is because they completely freaked out when Trump won and just started throwing everything at the wall to discredit him, to discredit the win, to have him enter his presidency under a cloud of suspicion and distrust.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, okay? If there turned out to be, okay, just follow me down this yellow brick road for a moment. If there turned out to be some form of Russia collusion between between Trump and Russia. Okay. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Okay.
There is no immediate, there it is, he's out of office. Like, there's no, I don't even think there's like a legal means to even hold him sort of accountable. Right. He just kind of gets, oh, you did that.
Oh.
You shouldn't have done that.
Right.
That might have an impact on your next campaign.
Right.
How many people out there think that that's not the case?
I don't know.
How many people think that if they find evidence of that, well, there are people out there out now that think he should already be removed for office because of the implication.
There's been such a pig pen like swirl of news around Trump, you know, this whole time that, yeah, I do think that there's a lot of people out there that probably are walking around with the opinion because they don't actually read stories. They just see headlines and they just see reaction. Probably a lot of people out there that truly think that Trump and Putin worked hand in hand to rig this election, and that as soon as they find that smoking gun, he's out, man. We're talking treason charges.
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably a lot of people out there, not a majority by any stretch, but a lot of people out there that if you presented them with that scenario, would just nod along and go, yeah, that's what happened.
There's a big group of people out there right now that if for some reason the president were to be hauled off to jail, like right now, just based off the accusations alone, they'd be like, awesome, great, cool. Yeah. They'd be, yay! Yeah.
They care more about partisanship than they do actual, like, law. And fairness,
yeah.
And the Constitution and all that stuff. It's all about partisanship. It's all about their team winning.
So late in the day yesterday, not surprisingly, with news that more Americans now say the Russian investigation is politically motivated. That's dropped considerably, by the way. In January, 84% said Trump should cooperate. Now only 76% do. This story broke. This particular version is out of Fox News. There are many. Attorney for Stormy Daniels, as a porn star, claims he's found records of financial transactions between a Russian oligarch and President Trump's personal attorney.
And we're just taking this at face value.
Right.
We're just supposed to believe this.
Michael Cohen linked firm received big payments from Russian oligarch, according to a report. Okay, so...
Yeah. A report by the attorney for Stormy Daniels, who is salivating at every possibility to get more media and get more attention. Let's really put this into context here.
All Avenatti did, okay, was he took the details, which we'll get into, of what actually transpired here. He took those details and then continued his media tour, his porn star Stormy Daniels media tour. He tweeted yesterday, basically, Cohen, Russia, oligarch, $500,000 payments, Trump. He basically kind of put all that stuff together and then threw it up in a tweet to which everybody ran.
Right.
Michael Cohen was paid $500,000 after the election from Russian oligarch. That's all that was needed to be said. The truth of the matter was payments totaling $500,000 were made by an investment firm. That investment firm, Columbus Nova, in 2017. Now, this is the New York Times reported this. Okay, so this happened. One of the firm's biggest clients is a company helmed by a Russian oligarch, Viktor Vekselberg. Reportedly was questioned at an airport by members of special counsel Robert Mueller's team investigating the alleged Russia collusion. An attorney for the company said the money was for a consulting fee that was unconnected to Vekselberg. The reality of the whole thing is Michael Cohen did accept hundreds of thousands of dollars from various companies such as Novartis and AT&T after the election to provide insight into the new administration. He also accepted the money after he announced he was leaving the Trump administration and starting a consulting firm. That's commonplace and legal. Most D.C. lawyers would be imprisoned if it were illegal. So the Russian oligarch, Viktor, has a U.S. affiliate called Columbus Nova. That is the company that handed out the payments. In a statement, an attorney for Columbus Nova said the management firm is owned and controlled by Americans, not Viktor Vekselberg. So basically, you have this legitimate transfer of money that happens to have, and an oligarch, for those that don't know, is a rich guy in Russia who has political influence.
Yeah.
And so it was a completely legitimate payment going to Cohen along with other companies like AT&T. But because this one company had one guy that happened to be Russian.
Yeah.
And because of the timeline, suddenly everybody went, oh, he's been paid off by the Russians. No, that's not necessarily. This is more fake news. It's just more fake news.
Yeah.
Reports today that Victor Vekelsberg used Columbus Nova as a conduit payment for Michael Cohen are false. The claim that Victor was involved or provided any funding for Columbus Nova's engagement of Michael Cohen is patently untrue. That came from Columbus Nova itself. Neither Victor nor anyone else other than Columbus Nova's owners were involved in the decision to hire Cohen or providing funding for his engagement.
But Michael Avenatti said, Michael Avenatti tweeted something, so they got him. It's over.
Unbelievable. Okay. Unbelievable.
Done.
And that's it. And it's so powerful. It's so powerful a tweet like that can be. It's frightening how the story can get so twisted and turned around where you just have the words porn star, Russia, Cohen, Trump, that's all you need. Yeah. Just think about it. And you mentioned it and say it one more time. Michael Avenatti, the attorney for Stormy Daniels, was the one that found the smoking gun?
Yeah, yeah. Not the year investigation from Robert Mueller. Michael Avenatti, the attorney for Stormy Daniels, who happens to be kind of a media whore.
He's a hero.
Right?
He's a hero,
suddenly
Drew.
Found the smoking gun that Robert Mueller has been looking for all this time? Okay. We'll see where this goes.
651-989-5855. Coming up out of Fox 9, Edina parents question role of politics in education. Following school board controversy, we're going to dive right into this next on Justice and Drew.
Justin.
AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Good morning and welcome back to your Wednesday edition of Justice and Drew. In just shy of 30 minutes, heading up towards the top of the hour, GOP gubernatorial candidate Mary Giuliani Stevens will be calling in, and we will check in with her and see how that campaign is going.
We have a friend of the show, listener. We'll keep them anonymous. We haven't talked to them about whether or not we wanted to say who they were. But they alerted us to something going on inside the Edina School District that we want to bring to your attention. Before we get to that, just real quick, if you just want to have some fun and you're on the Twitters, we made a comment a moment ago, Drew, that there would be a portion. I don't know how big a portion, but there would be a portion of those here in the United States that if the president were hauled off to jail without being convicted of anything, I mean, heck, not even have gone, you know, into the process of being convicted of anything, if he was just hauled off to jail right now,
yeah,
just based off of the implications, uh-huh, and public accusations, uh-huh, that they would celebrate it.
Yeah, they'd have a big old party.
And thankfully, there is an individual on Twitter who was kind enough to go ahead and prove our point.
Yeah, if Trump was carted off to jail today, tonight I would throw a party that would rival any block party in size and scope. Because you don't care,
wow,
whether or not it's justified or not. You just don't like him, so you want to see him thrown in jail.
Wow, that's insane.
That's so bizarre, man. Wow. That's not, you know, a country that's run by people like that would be terrifying, and it would be basically North Korea.
It would, yes, yeah. 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 They should move to North Korea.
Yeah,
that's how stuff's done.
That's how stuff's done there. Yeah, when you disagree or when you don't like somebody, that's enough to just get them thrown into jail, whether or not they did anything wrong, just because you believe it.
Ugh.
I think he might have.
That's frightening.
Throw him in jail.
And they don't have to listen. You don't have to listen. Why do you listen?
Oh, they can't quit us.
I know.
They can't quit us.
That's
Are
hard.
You kidding?
I know.
I mean, they love you. They really do.
I know. That might be my wife. I feel like, you know. it feels like a very similar dynamic. You know, just shaking her head at me like all the time, but just can't seem to quit me. You know, that's weird. All right, let's go here. Fox 9, and we'll try and lay this out. So it starts like this. This is the Fox 9 report. Edina parents question role of politics in education following school board controversy. According to the story, parents in Edina rallied in support of a school board member facing discipline over a social media post criticizing a high school teacher's English class discussions, sparking a community-wide agreement over the place of politics in education. Okay, so that's kind of it's kind of laying the groundwork. We'll get into more of this. Here's more from Fox 9 from the story that they had last night.
Where she needs our help, she needs our support, because she expressed some conservative viewpoints, and now they're going to try and impeach her for it.
Education is not really supposed to be partisan. And it's pretty clear that partisan politics have not only become part of the Edina public school system, but also part of this, in this case, I would say the school board.
Now, over the last year, there has been major issues within the Edina School District with clashes between conservative and liberal agendas and beliefs. Now, at last check, the school board was still discussing whether or not to dismiss Sarah Platzoff. It's my understanding a final will be made tonight. We did reach out to the school board president, but he didn't want to comment until this is all over with.
So Sarah Platzoff is a conservative Edina resident who was elected to the Edina school board several years ago. She's now the vice chair of the board, an extremist leftist teacher. And this is clear. We'll read to you some of the posts that kind of sparked this whole thing. An extremist leftist teacher in the Edina school district posted a politically charged left-wing rant on Facebook. Okay? That's out in public. Okay? Sarah forwarded the post. Okay? Post that was made public to a private, member-only conservative Facebook group, along with a comment questioning the teacher and her rant.
Okay.
A mole within the private group then forwarded her post to the school board chairman and asked what the school board was going to do about this problem person.
Because of a post
right.
made in a closed private social media group.
Right.
Now the school board has to do something about this problem person.
Over a post by a 10th grade teacher, this Jackie Rule, that was made public. So the special school board session...
It was never intended to be public. Oh, no, the original...
The original post that Sarah was commenting
on. Gotcha.
Okay.
Sorry.
So a special school board session was called for yesterday. The school board intended to vote, and we don't know what the results are yet, on whether they will unseat Sarah Platzoff from the Edina School Board for privately expressing her opinion, an opinion that was at the heart of the November election debate that unseated two incumbents. So look, even just on its surface level, before you even get into what the 10th grade teacher wrote.
That's some tyrannical crap going on there.
Right?
It really is.
It's frightening.
You cannot have an opinion if you're a teacher and you can't share that opinion in a private, closed, not made public Facebook group.
Right.
If you're a teacher in the Edina School District.
And what's ridiculous about this.
That's fascist.
Is that the blog post by this 10th grade teacher, Jackie Rule, Voices from the Inside. Right. This is as politically charged as you could possibly get with this post that she had. But that's totally fine and acceptable. But you can't dare question it as a school board member in a private group. Just like, hey, did you see what she wrote on here? Look, and we'll give you some of the points from this, right? Written by this 10th grade teacher. I teach in Edina, Minnesota, a first ring Minneapolis suburb dominated by white affluent students and high performing schools. When the school district made a commitment to ensure racial equity for all Edina public students, some parents, students, and even employees questioned that decision, wondering why we need to explore race, racism, and whiteness when our schools are consistently ranked among the top in the state and the nation. What's clear about this whole post is that they want the fight. They want this battle.
Yeah.
They want turmoil to try to push their cause. I mean, she mentions in here that her desire to make teachers and students uncomfortable to try to push whatever, you know, social justice warrior agenda that they want to push. Fortunately, many community members and educators embrace the idea that to end racism in the United States and close the racial achievement gap, teachers and students must explicitly and courageously discuss issues of race, racism, and whiteness. She's gonna gonna end racism, Drew.
Yeah, yeah. How about you teach math?
Yeah.
I mean, that, you know, it's an alternative option, like a plan B.
Maybe. Right?
If you determine that ending racism, which is a human condition that has been around since we all started realizing that there are differences in some of us. There's always been racists, and there's always going to be some racists. When you realize that that's a goal you're never going to achieve, how about maybe teaching math?
You get in further into the, and there's so much. This thing is just tinged with social justice and politics. She goes on to say things like this. Teachers must understand that this is the 10th grade teacher. This is the post that the school board member in that private group was questioning. Yeah. Teachers must understand that equity is not equality because students have individual needs in terms of process and assessment, just like the vegetables in my garden have individual needs, with my tomatoes needing more water than my onions. Success in the garden comes from caring for each plant according to its needs. Success in schools comes from giving each student a specific instruction she or he needs to reach a high intellectual performance.
Okay, so now we know this person's a communist. I mean, that was just sort of an analogy to Marxism.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, from each to each. You know the drill.
Yeah. Right. Oh, that's clear.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now she's...
Cool. So you're a Marxist.
Glad we got that out of the way.
Now, can you teach math?
She goes on to tout all the reasons why she's so great. How she worked with this PEG program, the National Urban Alliance for Effective Education. I realized that mostly my white students were reflecting white culture back to me. And that my students of color were left out of classroom discussions altogether.
Well, then you're a crappy teacher.
Right!
Yeah.
There's a lot of examples of how bad she is at teaching.
That's on you, Jackie.
A study of critical race theory helped me reach a place that I am today. A teacher who not only incorporates culturally relevant strategies, but also understands the importance of critically examining systems of racism that prevent some students from achieving their highest potential in school.
And I'm going to do that instead of teaching math because it's easier.
In addition to the care team, members personally changed their pedagogy. The team wanted to impact the entire staff. So we started sharing the strategies and philosophies with colleagues through equity seminars. For example, one 3-hour session called on critical race theory and the film The House We Live In impacted many staff members, especially examining whiteness as property, and pushed them to understand the importance of equity work at Edina High School.
You know, if you want your kids to have this kind of education, you should have that option.
Sure.
But this is so ideologically driven. This has no business being in public schools. The argument that all these people will always make against charter schools and private schools and vouchers and things like that are that, you know, well, what if these schools are going to just, you're going to teach a certain way? You know, if you're going to have a public school system, this should just be the base knowledge. It shouldn't be ideologically driven. There should be options available for parents who want their kids to get this kind of ridiculous social justice indoctrination. But when you are forced to send your kids to public schools, because we kind of are, this just has no business being in there whatsoever.
But
so ideologically driven.
But Drew, according to this 10th grade teacher, Jackie Rule, the largely white student body at the largely white school would be significantly unprepared to succeed in the world beyond the classroom if we didn't explicitly teach them about race, racism, and whiteness before they ventured out into a world that is significantly more racially diverse than the community. She's got a job to do.
Yeah.
Apparently, she doesn't understand that
the job clearly isn't teaching English.
It's like these students only exist at the school. Yeah. Like, they don't interact with the rest of the world at all. Oh, it's ever. Only in this radical social justice communist warrior's classroom.
Sue in Edina. Good morning. Go ahead.
Hi there. We've had experience with Ms. Rail as well, but this isn't about that particular teacher. My child had to actually take a class called Racism and Whiteness because he registered too late, so he he was stuck with taking this midterm class. We ended up pulling him because the teacher said, basically, she was reading a poem, and she basically told the class, I can't even say this next word without feeling ill, and the word was police. My grandfather was a police officer who was killed in the line of duty.
Wow.
He was a child from the class. When this came out, the new superintendent denied the class existed. He said we never had a class called Race, Racism, and Whiteness, which we have a transcript of. But since then, the class has been renamed to a number on my kid's transcript.
Wow.
So they're hiding the fact of what that class was actually about.
Wow.
They scrubbed his transcript.
That's unbelievable.
That school district needs to be imploded. Just absolutely dismantled. Thank you, Sue. I appreciate it. That the Edina School District needs to be utterly dismantled. It is ruined. It is corrupted from the inside out.
We're just about out of time. There's one point in here, and again, it was. I'm so glad that we had Drew. I'm so glad we had that opportunity, and thank you to Kim Crockett at Center of the American Experiment for inviting us along to see Candace Owens speak yesterday, because it was such a fantastic experience to hear the words of this, and she is, for what it's worth, Candace Owens is very courageous for going out there and being as vocal as she is, right? But in light of what we saw Candace speak about yesterday, this just blew my mind. Jackie Rule, this 10th grade teacher, 3 years ago, teachers across the school had little direct discussion of race. I recall a moment 3 years ago when I told my class, let's get a black student's perspective. And many white students yelled at me in response and said, you can't say that. That's racist. She says it like it was the student's problem for pointing out that she shouldn't be going and trying to single out an individual in the classroom based on the color of their skin.
Right.
Unbelievable.
Right. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, no. That mindset of, you know, of attempting to be colorblind and just, you know, not thinking about a person's skin color when you choose how to or when to interact with them or anything like that, that mindset has been completely abandoned. It is now racist to treat people equally.
Oh.
That's how far we've gone. That's how much this has been flipped over on its head. If you treat people equally and you don't factor in what they look like and how you interact with them and how you think of them, you are being racist. That's how they think now.
And we mentioned yesterday that when there were several students from the school that were in the crowd yesterday, and thankfully it's well known what's going on there. I just don't know if anything's going to be done about it.
I got called racist for agreeing with Candace Owens.
Wait,
no sense.
Wait, what?
I agreed with her.
Wait, what?
I share a similar viewpoint.
What?
Then somebody actually said that makes me racist.
Okay.
651-989-5855. We will continue on this a little bit later. But coming up next, we are going to talk with GOP gubernatorial candidate Mary Giuliani Stevens. Justin.